Welcome back. Today we are talking to Matt Jones of Lockforce. They are a business continuity planning and general security assessment advisory. They're based in Australia, but they also have an office and quite a significant presence here in the Philippines. Today we are exploring obviously BCP's business continuity planning in the context of the coronavirus. We are recording this on the 8th of May, so we're still very much in the thick of the coronavirus. There is enhanced quarantine lockdown here in Manila still, which is having an impact on the BPO industry. Now, this conversation focuses a lot on Manila and the Philippines, but I think a lot of what you can take away about business continuity planning and planning for the things that you don't expect and how to continue business during those situations are very applicable for everyone in any country, anywhere. So I had a really good conversation with Matt, and I hope you enjoy. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. Matt Jones, welcome to the show. You are from Lockforce. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Derek. It's great to be here.
What exactly is Lockforce and how do you guys fit into this coronavirus?
Yeah, Lockforce specializes in sort of strategic level security, business continuity, crisis and emergency management. We advise a lot of companies and develop their plans from companies evacuating, country evacuation plans as an example, developing pandemic plans and supporting IT disaster recovery plans as well. So anything about maintaining your business during a disruptive event or a crisis.
Wow, so you're the guy to know during a coronavirus pandemic then, yeah?
Yeah, there's a few on the team, but definitely the guys that support us have a lot of experience between the group.
And to put it into context, we are based in Manila in the Philippines, and we're typically talking about the BPO industry here. Lockforce, how are they involved in the Philippines?
So we've got an office in Perth, Australia, and in Queensland, and in Manila. So we actually found a lot of our clients in Perth, Australia, are actually also in Manila. So we've been in Manila, Philippines, for 9 years now, and supporting both our clients from the same clients in Perth and in Australia, and a lot of because they outsource a lot to the Philippines. I've dealt a lot with the BPO industry in Metro Manila, especially.
Great. And, the Lockforce concerns itself with safety, security, BCPs, continuity planning, and I suppose protecting the downside positions of companies. Can you give a little bit more color and detail in that? What are some examples of how you actually get in and help businesses either with sort of proactive procedures or in terms of planning things?
Yeah, sure. There's a particular company we've done a lot of work for in the Philippines is we establish their plans, but the process in order to do that is to do a full assessment of their site and their locations where their staff reside, and then conduct a risk assessment. And it's not just me going away and doing a risk assessment. I pre-populate it with what I think, but I actually facilitate a workshop and get the input from key people in the organization. But once we have those sort of level of risks, then we are able to develop the plans that are suitable for that organization in their specific location, and also considering where their staff are located. And then once the plans are in place, then there's facilitating the implementation of those plans, which is key. So it's not just a document or piece of paper. There's actually the physical side of implementing it and training their staff in the use of the plans. And then there's the follow-on testing that we do. So once a business continuity plan is developed, it's important then to run simulation training for the people that would be involved in a crisis so they get as much realistic training as possible under a simulation exercise. And that's sort of start from start to finish. And then there's maintaining and coming back and doing internal audits for that same organization, making sure that they are complying with that plan and the plan is still effective for what they're doing.
We've been in lockdown now for about 7 or 8 weeks in the Philippines. It's been a fairly strict lockdown. And, you know, the outsourcing industry is quite a unique industry because it spans the globe. Obviously, the fulfillment and personnel are sitting in the Philippines, but their clients and the work that they are fulfilling is for clients across the globe. So, you know, it has a sort of peculiar impact, especially when there's like a global pandemic and a global issue like this. And so, you know, we're talking about coronavirus in perspective of Manila and how it's had an impact, but also then the sort of second level impact of that to the clients spread across the globe. Have you become a very busy man since coronavirus? And is there things you can necessarily spring into action and do on behalf of companies or with companies, or you know, for companies to have effective plans, do they need to plan in advance?
Absolutely. So I have been very busy doing a lot of webinars and talks, but also developing a lot of plans and assisting companies understand the process to recover from this particular pandemic. This is unique. This has not really happened since the 1900s. Early 1900s. So this has especially affected a lot of BPO industries. A lot of the BPO industries have back office support, and they're relying on their clients to do well in order for them to be used. So when the global pandemic, a lot of countries are heavily restricted and businesses are suffering significantly. Therefore, they don't need that back office support because they're not generating the work themselves. Now, that has an impact, but the BPOs that still can operate with some clients, they're under lockdown themselves and they can't actually go into an office. And they have to work from home, which introduces a lot of security issues, especially if their BPOs are handling confidential information. Some BPOs cannot work anywhere but in the office, in the security environment that they're in. Others that can are impacted by the internet connectivity, work hours, the disruption of the internet, communications, lack of communication, and lack of supervision as well.
How have you seen the impact of coronavirus on the BPO industry? Or, you know, how have you seen the response? Where are you seeing the BPOs now? Are they kind of functional or limping by?
They're currently limping by. So a client of mine in Cebu, actually, big BPO, 95% of his staff are working from home. Now, they can only do that at a reduced capacity. There's only so much work that can be done from working at home. And that's going to have a long-term impact to the business because the volume of work isn't there from their existing clients. So the issue is that they can't travel into the office, they're handling confidential information, and the clients lose confidence in the ability for them to do their back office support or handling of confidential information if they know the staff are working from home. Now, the other issue that probably will come to light post this pandemic is a lot of clients are going, well, now that you are able to work from home, I don't want to pay as much because now you've proven to me that you can work from home and provide the same level of service, but I want it at a discount because now you don't need an office, or you don't need as big an office.
It's an interesting situation, isn't it? Because we, you know, you mentioned there the high security environments that need full, I don't know, PCI compliance and ISO compliance and things like that. Generally, those facilities mean that they're a higher value offering. They're more secure in the services that they offer because they're so specialized and meet very high requirements. But they're being completely decapitated because people aren't able to get into the office and those operations aren't able to be run from home. Yet, you know, as you say, the BPO or the operations where it's more casual, people can just work from their laptops, people are now finding or certainly realizing that they don't necessarily have to pay a premium for the office. So it's kind of had a bilateral impact on the industry, hasn't it?
It certainly has. And what will also come out of all of this is the people who can work from home and the people who need to face-to-face supervision to work effectively. I've experienced this within my own organization. Staff you can't physically monitor what your staff are doing, and you don't know what work they are actually doing. You can't control it. You can't supervise it. So you are relying on staff to produce the work. So if they can't be supervised, the quality of work and the output of work is going to be impacted as well.
And it's easy. I think there's a common narrative now to say, you know, you don't need to monitor people and people don't need to come into the office and, you know, kind of like a robot. And that's fair enough, but not all of society is this sort of high-level, enlightened kind of creative aspect of work. You know, some roles you need to turn up on time because you are fitting into a shift pattern. You know, there needs to be the hierarchy of quality control and checks, and then there needs to be sort of aspects of security and cross-checking. So it absolutely doesn't suit every role, does it? There's probably a segment of society where, you know, generally work can be done asynchronously and you can do it from wherever you want. But there's so many roles still that require structure and shifts and, as you say, like the oversight and hierarchy.
And there's some BPOs that operate on different shift timings to coordinate with the international time zone their clients are in. So there's working with the US, for example, from Philippines, they only do night shift. So the shift timings and travel is going to be significantly impacted once the ECQ is lifted in Manila as well, which will impact a lot of industries.
So with business continuity planning or BCPs, it's always there. People are always aware of these things, and it's very commonly raised in the Philippines because, the Philippines is sort of first in line for a lot of natural disasters. Unfortunately, it's on the Ring of Fire, has a lot of volcanic activity. It's in line for, you know, has a lot of earthquakes. It's in line for a big earthquake. It also has a lot of tsunamis or cyclones. And so there's a big conversation around all these facilities needing backup facilities, needing multiple locations. But there's never been a sort of compromise to operations like this coronavirus, or certainly in the last 100 years. With the nature of BCP or the planning of it, how can you possibly cover every single event, and how do you weigh out these, the likelihood of things happening versus the severity of things happening? And then if there is something that can come along once in every 100 years, is it really possible to do a good job in managing that? Or are we all just, you know, we've just got to cope as well as we can?
But look, that's a really good question, and you can't plan for every type of scenario that could possibly occur. And that's what the risk assessment process is about. When we look at those types of scenarios that are high likelihood, relatively low consequence, like typhoons, especially in the Philippines, it's a regular thing. The whole society is really efficient at dealing with it and know exactly what to do from a cultural point of view. But when the big earthquake that is expected will on the West Valley Fault, that's a 7.2 magnitude earthquake, you'd be surprised at how many businesses are actually located on the fault line, and a lot of BPOs are on the fault line or very close to it, and are going to be significantly impacted, and they don't have plans in place for that. And the only plan they can have is to move their operations, or split their operations. Other organizations don't know how to plan correctly or don't know how to respond. A lot of the webinars that I've been delivering on is not about the response, because that they're already in that. They want to know, how do we go through the process to recover our business? So there is a process you follow. And if a team of people are coordinated and understand the approach to plan, they can put in recovery strategies. An example would be to base the current lockdown that's in Manila. That has been extended, by the looks of it, to June 15 now.
Oh, wow. That's breaking news. Yes. Really? The full enhanced quarantine?
Yes. So where we were planning to start our office back up, now that's looking like being extended. But so therefore we have plans in place. So if the ECQ was lifted, this is what our response was going to be once that lifted. If it extends past the May 15th, which it was scheduled for, this is what we're going to do. So it's about having strategies. A lot of businesses, especially senior management, will have strategies, and they'll come up with strategies, but it's the execution of those strategies which is significantly lacking in detail. Mm. So the strategy could be, we're going to open up the office, but how many staff are you going to let come in? Where are they coming from? What transport's available? What time are you going to start the office, because the transport's going to be delayed? How are you going to set up the office, because there's legal requirements now that's released by Dole in the Philippines to how to set up the office. You have to do temperature checks. You have to provide face masks for everyone. As you know, they're significantly limited, so you want to start pre-planning now. You not wait for the office to open and then go, we can't bring anyone in for 2 weeks because we can't get any face masks. So that's what I mean about it's the process of planning. Let's get a strategy, but let's break it down into the steps and what actions need to be done, by who, by when, and then who's going to be responsible for monitoring those, so then you can have some sort of oversight to see if actions are being closed out on time.
Business continuity planning, I suppose, is limited by the investment that people are willing to make up front for something that might or might not occur. So it's effectively an insurance provision and payment, isn't it, for something that could occur in the future. And it's kind of self-limiting, because you can only pay or invest so much in advance before it sort of outweighs then the sort of cost of something happening and then just dealing with it when it happens. Are there calculations that take that into consideration? And, because I look at sort of a common BCP planning, which is about having a secondary office in a different location. So if the primary office is taken out, you can just move across that secondary office. But there is no organization in the world that could afford to have a duplicate of an office just sitting there in case of a rainy day. So where is the balance then in terms of the insurance contribution for something that could potentially happen?
Yeah, look, another good question. So they call them, there's hot sites. You can actually rent them You pay a retainer fee each month or whatever, and you'll be guaranteed so many spots in this office location. Now, the trouble is that a lot of these companies take far more retainers than what they could actually support, and it'll be first in, best dressed, so to speak. So I think it's got to be a risk-based approach, and it comes down to your acceptance, your threshold of risk, your appetite for the risk. An example would be this particular issue with the pandemic. No one really expected this to happen, but people were prepared to accept the risk of not having an alternate site because of the cost to maintain that alternate site on the off chance that something like this may happen. However, you can have strategies in place that can be enacted in order to resume operations quicker. So an example of what I mean is if whatever the scenario is, if no one could get to work, that could be caused from an earthquake, it could be caused from a typhoon, it could be caused from a pandemic. And then you can map out, well, the period of time that potentially you're going to have staff not access the office. You can have strategies in place on what you can do to recover the business within a few weeks or something like that. Working from home is the most obvious one to implement straight away, but how long can you sustain that as a business? And how long will your clients stay with you if you've got staff working from home? You can look at that then. An idea would be, let's just identify areas that we could go to from a hot site point of view or alternate offices. So you've listed all of those offices that you could potentially go to. And then, so if something like this happens, you go, well, let's contact that list of offices and see if we can get some workstations. That's an alternative. It's a cheaper alternative based on the limited chance something like this could happen. But it's quicker than not having any plan at all. So you can base that level of, base your response on your risk acceptance threshold.
Yeah, and I suppose it's like an XY axis, isn't it? I'm making this up, so I go now. But the expense of a solution and the effectiveness of that solution. And you know, I was talking to a BPO owner with about 3,000 or 4,000 seats, and he said very pragmatically, which really resonated with me, the best BCP or the most sort of fundamental BCP everyone can or should have is just to have a mobile workforce if it needs to be, which means that, you know, you can potentially in most situations, you can effectively dump the office as long as your infrastructure is in the cloud and everyone has a laptop, you know. And it's quite a simple and I suppose very, you know, nice solution to something that can potentially get very complex otherwise. But do you think, but even that isn't really in the grasp of most BPOs, is it? Because everyone's kind of limited to their desktop and then not, things aren't always accessible remotely. What are your thoughts, I suppose, now trying to formulate a question out of this, but what are your thoughts on that most basic BCP in just ensuring that if need be, everyone can work remotely?
This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
That's fine. I actually agree with that concept. So, but it's about identifying all of your functions that you conduct within your organization and identifying who can do those. Can this be done by working at home? What resources would they need? What do I need to do from a risk security perspective? There's other things, especially in the Philippines. So one of the things, we don't let our staff take home laptops. And it's not because I don't trust them. It's because I don't want to put them at risk of being robbed or something like that. Some of our staff travel 2 hours to the office to get to work. So there's those sort of risks that you can introduce if it's not planned and coordinated correctly. So there's generally what we call as a teleworking procedure. So prior to conducting any working from home or teleworking, there's the person is identified who can do that. What software do they need? What resources do they need? Do they just need a laptop? Do they need spare screens? Do they need access to certain applications? Do they need access to, central databases or VPN? How much internet or data do they need? And is that has a budget been put aside to provide staff with the cash to, or the ability to pay for extra data from their home? In the Philippines, you can't. I know it's like in Australia, I just get my internet bill once a month and I pretty much get unlimited data. That doesn't work like that, especially in the Philippines. If they're going to consume more data, it's going to cost a lot more. So therefore, you have to provide some sort of fund that extra internet or data usage if they are going to work from home. So there's identifying those things as well. So setting up, yes, you can work from home, but this is what you need to do. From a budget perspective for staff working from home, we need to make sure we allocate, an extra 1,000 peso a month or whatever it would be needed for that person to get the extra data so they can download documents and get on the VPN and or cloud or whatever the web-based server that you have to conduct their work.
Do you get involved at all in the software solutions in that, you know, people can log in remotely effectively through a sort of dummy server into kind of virtual, they're kind of firewalled secured systems, aren't they? So that they're accessing from home, but effectively they're only seeing kind of a copy of the data on their screen. Are you involved in that at all? Maybe you can explain it better.
I don't do that. That's certainly a specialised skill, but I do work with the people that do set up those systems. So, you know, TeamViewer is one that we utilise. So you can log in through TeamViewer, and that's where our IT guy may reside. He resides in a completely different area, but he can get in and fix your computer, for example. So the same thing is we've set this up for our accounts manager over in the Philippines, that she can log into the computer in the office through TeamViewer and do all the work that is, from an accounting point of view, anywhere in the world. So we have that capability. So if our Philippines accounts manager can't access it for internet down or whatever, our Australian accounts manager can access the accounts software and continue sending invoices and processing accounts as required, which for us is a critical process. Well, I'm sure invoicing is a critical process for everyone.
And I think we're in a lucky situation, really. I mean, you can never say it's lucky to be where we are now, but if this had happened 20 years ago with the technology where it was then, there would be zero remote work. You know, people needed to be in the office. We were still in a sort of hard copy paper environment. I think at least now, you know, people might not all be on Zoom or in Google Docs or in the cloud, but there's certainly the option. And if they're forced to, then they can adopt those tools that I think we've seen a lot over the last month or two. Yeah. Has BCP planning got a lot easier since, well, with the technology support?
For this sort of situation, it has. So normally the majority of BCPs are focused around any IT recovery. So they're looking at the IT systems breaking down and then how are we going to recover those IT systems so we can get up and running. Whereas in this pandemic, IT is the solution to maintaining business and recovering business. So if we should happen to lose both, I don't know where what we'd do. But that definitely nowadays with the video conferencing, it's enabled people to be able to work from home and still sort of maintain some business critical processes of any business at least.
Mm. We mentioned that just before we came on air, the risk of someone's internet going down. And I suppose that's, it comes into the high or low consequence and the high or low probability, but certainly it's a high probability that internet can be interrupted in the Philippines. But it's a really significant consequence, isn't it? Have you ever done any studies on this? What are the risks of the world's internet going down if there was like a cyber attack or a sort of international attack? The whole world would be paralyzed if the internet wasn't active.
Yeah, I haven't done it from a global perspective, but when I did my master's, I did it on the BPO industry in Metro Manila. And one of the risks that happened, it was a few years ago now, but the main internet submarine cables that come into Philippines was broken by an earthquake that happened in Japan. So there is actually a website that shows the all the internet submarine cables, and there's three now that come into the Philippines to minimize that disruption, as an example. But globally, I haven't looked at the risk from a global perspective, but I know that majority of businesses would come to a standstill without internet, with no internet at all.
It's funny, isn't it? There's just so many sort of potential risks out there, and maybe we overlook, everyone's looking for the big boogie monster, but potentially some of the most simple things can cause the biggest damage. I do actually have a friend who owns a BPO down in Davao, and they actually monitor on behalf of a company, a client, they monitor all of the undersea submarine internet cables, and it's a private entity, but they basically monitor any ships in the region and then call the ships if they're getting too near. Because apparently it's super common for ships to cut these lines, and then they face a bill of multi-millions of dollars. So it's there's crazy stuff happening out there.
I was going to say, so the World Economic Forum, they release a global risks report. So from a business perspective, from a global business perspective, they've done a lot of research on the expected risks over the next period of reporting period. So they look at it at an annual basis, types of risks that occurred, what are the new types of risks that global businesses need to consider. It's actually quite a good document from that perspective.
Great. Yeah, we'll refer people to that. One thing as well, you mentioned before the call was that BCPs aren't so much about having a roadmap for every threat, but it's actually about having a plan or a procedure in dealing with threats as they arise. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so we certainly have specific responses to scenarios. However, like I said, there's some new scenarios that could happen that we didn't expect. So therefore, we have to understand the planning process. So that is about understanding the context of what has happened, the level of impact it's had, the locations that it's had, and how does that impact your business. So the key information that you should already have is, what are all my key processes and how long can I do without them before it becomes catastrophic to my business? So if you've done that level of analysis, any scenario that occurs, you have a team meeting, so this scenario has occurred, what processes are impacted? Are they critical? How long can they be disrupted before it becomes catastrophic to the business? Once you identify what processes are impacted and what you need to recover, then you may have to develop specific new plans for that, or can a recovery plan from another similar type of scenario work? As the example that I gave earlier, you could have a scenario, your building burns down. The actual impact is, apart from a business process point of view, is my staff can't access the building. They can't get to work. So if you have a scenario like pandemic, what's the situation? They can't get to work. Your building's still there, but they can't access it because of the lockdown. So your resumption process for that example of loss of a building, it's going to be roughly the same process to follow for this pandemic. Your immediate response is going to be, trigger working from home. You've got an information officer, their roles and responsibilities to monitor what websites for specific information to update the team so they can go through their planning process, see what plans need to be implemented, what actions need to be executed, and by when. So it's that planning process that needs to be practiced. And that's what a lot of companies, they come up with the strategies, but they don't have the execution component well rehearsed.
And we are hopefully nearing or seeing a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of this coronavirus, but none of us know whether there's going to be another peak, whether it's going to come back in 6 months or another 18 months. Once this is over, in inverted commas, do you think people are going to be more aware of BCPs and rush out and get one? Or do you think as soon as this is cleared, people are going to be even shorter on cash, and then they're just going to carry on their merry way and be knocked back by the next one?
I think it's going to be 50-50. There's a high probability there'll be a second wave, a high probability, and then this is based on all previous pandemics. There'll be a second wave and then a third wave. They're hoping to develop a vaccine. It generally takes between 12 and 18 months to do that. So once they lift the lockdown, people will start returning to work. It's only a matter of time before the second wave. It may not be as bad, but businesses would be remiss if they didn't start planning for that second wave and their response to that second wave.
And is there, I suppose a lazy man's BCP is business insurance. Is there insurance that covers these things and force majeure, or would you be a non-wise man to rely on these? Could they let you down if you needed to call on these insurance policies?
I don't think any businesses would be covered. I don't think insurance companies would cover businesses for the amount of losses that they could incur. But there is insurance out there, but you have to go and do the risk assessment, and you have to have a recovery plan or a pandemic plan, depending on the scenario, and in place for you to even get that insurance. So then the cost of implementing that plan may outweigh the cost that it would be for the insurance. So the insurance aren't going to insure you for something they're going to lose money on. So the premiums based on the risk are going to be extremely high. So then that's why companies sort of shy away from paying for insurance for these sort of things. The cost
of insurance
is too high.
Yeah, there's a risk benefit thing there, isn't there, that needs to be calculated all the time. Interesting. And so where are you seeing the, what's in the future, do you think, for the industry and coronavirus? Do you see this sort of prolonging? I mean, you're sitting in Australia and they're pretty much coming out of the lockdown now and resuming normal work. Do you think we're out of the worst?
I don't think Philippines is. So I think that it's only going to get worse. Australia was different. We've got a lot more space here. So social distancing wasn't really a problem. Whereas Philippines, you have the population of Australia in Metro Manila. You have three or four people living in one room. It's impossible to social distance, even with the lockdown the way it is. It's just trying to manage it and trying to lower their curve so they can try and handle the amount of people that are going to test positive to coronavirus. They're up around, I think, 10,343, and they've got 685 deaths so far in the Philippines. Mm. Whereas,
yeah, I don't think that's an exhaustive account, is it?
No, where you look at America, I think is up over 1 million. Mm. US is 1.2 million cases. But the business continuity plans, the industry that I see, I think people, I know this is a fact in Australia, that a lot of Australian businesses do outsource to the Philippines. And there's, because of this situation, they're just finding that it may be better to bring some of that back into Australia that they previously outsourced. And that is because of our response and Australia's response to this pandemic from the government. So our recovery plan, from a government point of view, they provide businesses a lot of money. They provide you money to keep staff on. So you want to give, if you've got a lot of the back office stuff that's outsourced to the Philippines is administration, that can be done. If you're getting paid a wage for someone in Australia, why would you pay money to another, to an organization that uses other staff when you're getting paid to maintain the administration staff in your company? But that's the response from the Australian government. I don't know what other countries do. However, now that's brought back in that, well, let's maintain a lot of those processes in Australia that we previously outsourced because of the risk of this potentially happening again. So this is, it's not going to stop the BPO industry, but I do think that it's going to impact the BPO industry. The Philippines took over first in the world for call centers, and India was second. Now, I think that they were both countries are going to be impacted by this. I think people are going to be a little bit more reluctant to outsource these sort of processes if they can do them in-house now.
But it's funny, isn't it? There's such a recency bias in terms of planning and judgments, I suppose, in that, if there's another pandemic going around, another global pandemic, yeah, you probably don't want to be outsourcing to the Philippines. But if there's an earthquake in Australia, God forbid, but and then Australian facilities are knocked out, you'd be hoping that you had sort of backup facilities in another country, in another location. So it really depends on the nature of the pandemic, doesn't it? And it's and that's why I suppose planning for every scenario becomes pretty difficult, because where one plan is advantageous for one scenario, it could actually be a detriment in another scenario.
Look, that's a really good point. And when I develop plans, so I look at the key functions of the business, and then what we do is we develop job action sheets for those functions. So it's basically a step-by-step instruction of what a person would need to do to complete that function. So in a everyday normal business operations, that person who's doing that job doesn't need that job action sheet, but should there be an earthquake occur and that person can't get to work and we have to outsource that out to another country, then the process is there that needs to be done. And then companies can still spread the risk as well. If anyone does their research in the Philippines, they'll see that there's actually safe areas from the earthquake. And that's only 2 hours drive from Manila. That's where the crisis management center is established and set up for all countries to land, set up to humanitarian aid if the earthquake or when the earthquake in Metro Manila occurs. So that's the long-term strategy, because that the earthquake or the fault lines don't run through that area. So if you had and they've just set that up now as a business hub as well. So there's a lot of BPOs.
Where is that, there. Matt?
Clark.
Okay, right. Yeah. Wow, is that earthquake free? Is it
the devastating West Valley fault? It's free from that.
Right.
There's earthquakes. There's a volcano up there, but that hasn't erupted in 13 years.
Mm.
And
Clark, which is, you know, just for the listeners, it's about sort of 2 hours slow drive out of Manila, effectively in the sort of peripheral aspect of the city. And it has a old US air base there. But it actually had an earthquake there about, what was it, 12 or 18 months ago, didn't it? Where it was, you know, there was moderate damage.
Yeah. It's a hot spot for earthquakes in the Philippines. You're never going to get away from that. But if the buildings are designed to withstand earthquakes, for example, I do earthquake vulnerability assessments. So I go and assess the buildings and give a probability of full collapse should a type of earthquake occur. So when businesses want to outsource the Philippines, they just need to see what is this business's real business continuity plan? What have they done to make the business more resilient so they can provide services should a natural disaster occur? And you're looking at typhoons, tsunamis, earthquakes, volcanic eruption, pandemic, which impacts everyone. From a natural disaster point of view, then there's the issue made about a group security related issues, that civil disturbance issues as well. But that's what needs to be considered, and they need to see that the plans are in place to cope with those, maintain business even in those scenarios occur.
Well, Matt, it's been quite a sobering conversation, but I think the thing that we can all take away from this is that it's better to be prepared and have some plans in place at the minimum rather than blind faith. But hopefully, you know, for everyone's sake, that we're kind of at least, hopefully through the worst of this and we're now sort of planning to come out the other side. Matt, if anyone wants to know more about Lockforce, it's you know, such a topical service at the moment, or of course get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Look, anyone can contact me via email. Email will be provided, so it's matthewj@lockforce.com.au. I can answer any questions you might have, especially about the BPO industry in the Philippines, and more specifically in Metro Manila. Did 6 months of research on the industry. So I know quite a lot about it. I know a lot of businesses there, and I've also done a lot of business continuity plans for those businesses in Metro Manila.
That was Matt Jones of Lockforce. If you want to get in touch with Matt or know anything else about what we spoke about or get any of those email addresses or links that he mentioned, go to our show notes, which is at outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And as always, if you want to get in touch with us, if you want to ask us anything, just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.